Welcome to the ADHD Alchemy Podcast, where women with ADHD finally feel seen, understood, and unapologetically themselves. If you have ever felt like you're too much and not enough all at the same time, you're in the right place because that's the alchemy, learning how both come together to make something priceless. I'm Jessica Covington, holistic ADHD coach and fellow fancy brain, and I'm really glad you're here. Let's get into it. Welcome to ADHD Alchemy. Guess what? It's more than a podcast. It's also my signature coaching program at Fitology. I built it for bright, sensitive women who are tired of feeling scattered and chaotic and ready to feel calm, clear, and fully in their strength. Inside the program, whether it's group or private, you'll finally drop the mask and start thriving. Together, we'll break the old patterns of overwhelm and procrastination and begin redefining ADHD on your own terms. In just a few weeks, you'll feel more grounded and confident and intentional by learning to work with your fancy brain instead of against it. This is where too much becomes your magic and where real lasting change starts on day one. So if that speaks to you, please find more at fitology.com. That link, of course, will be in the show notes. Today, I'm so excited to have with us Julie Duquet, the CEO of Homeschool to Go, the only personalized, holistic, and bilingual homeschooling program in the world. Together with her team of highly qualified teachers, they have over 5 decades of combined experience in Waldorf, Montessori, and Cambridge curricula. They value community, empathy, curiosity, and so much more as the basis for growing all kinds of minds with a special capacity for differently wired thinkers. So this is holistic homeschooling, taking into account the whole person and often blending lessons into real life experiences. So Julie, thank you for being here today. I'd love to start with a brief overview of what brought you into this work.
Thank you so much for having me, Jessica. I think if I go back to the times where I used to be a teacher at Cambridge schools, I also worked with Montessori schools and I used Waldorf curriculums to homeschool kids for other families. I found I could very clearly see the difference when you work with a child one-on-one versus when you have, 30, 20 children in one class. Mm-hmm. It's unfortunately always going to be a small group of that classroom that actually takes the full advantage of the education. And even then, there's more that you could go into to help those individuals, those students get to their full potential. I also realized when I was teaching those classes that the kids that were consistently the most outstanding in class always had the most present and involved parents at home. So it wasn't a matter of who was the smartest, who was the brightest, who was the most talented. It was who had the parent at home that cared. Those were usually the kids that were outstanding. And so it was almost like something clicked in my mind, like, oh, like it's got to be the work of the parent. And it's very hard in a system like this to take each one of those children to their genius unless there's more of a one-on-one personalized or individualized work happening behind the scenes. Then I knew from that work that when I had my own children, I would likely homeschool them because I was like, I'm teaching for the school. I have all the highest quality tools, methodologies, everything to give these kids. Like, parents are dropping $25,000 a year to bring these kids to this education. And I still strongly feel there is something missing. And so I said to myself, I'll homeschool my own kids when the day comes. And then when the day came and I started to look for materials, instruments, I couldn't find something that checked all my boxes. Of course, I had high standards because I was a Cambridge school teacher and, I really did value education. My parents did too. And so I decided to create it myself because it didn't exist yet. And as I was rolling that out, I saw so many parents interested. And so we started to, in those conversations with those parents, I learned more and more about what were the barriers from stopping parents from actually taking the plunge. So we continued to adapt the program to fit those needs. In other words, to make it easier for parents to commit to the homeschooling so that not just would be a great experience for their children that would shape them to their highest potential, but also something that was sustainable and enjoyable for the parent. And so here I am now, 15 years later from being a teacher, still teaching to an extent, like teaching other parents and teaching some group classes with the kids inside my program, but in a way different way, and in a way that I think is going to build a much stronger next generation, of leaders and geniuses.
Oh, I love that. And that phrase that you said, taking the kids to their genius, really underscores your belief in a strength-based paradigm, which I love.
Absolutely. I really don't understand why in the schools you think about, well, I do understand why, and we can talk about that later, but you are teaching everyone to have the same abilities. You think about if everyone has the same abilities, when they go out to the world, how are they going to create value for the world if everyone has the same? And then typically when a child is, behind on a specific subject, they make them do more of that su subject so that they can go back to the standard with everybody else. That's not really how you build a community that can complement each other. I think it's through the strengths. The other day I was having a conversation with a mom and she was telling me like, "Oh, my child, he's so advanced in mathematics. He wants to be doing mathematics. It's so easy all the time." And then when I give him words and reading comprehension exercises, he's just like not wanting to sit down. I said to her, "You know what we should do is we should even out the content so that he's doing 70% math and 30% reading." And she was like, "What? How does that make sense?" I say, "Yeah, like the only reason why you're conditioned to this is because of the whole brainwashing that happens during the school, this belief that we all need to be learning the same. It's not that way. And if you accentuate his math learning, which he loves, his passion, he's going to become more and more outstanding in that, probably going to end up pursuing a career or finding some sort of way to offer value in that subject, rather than, spending all this time fighting against himself to do. Like, you still have to do it to an extent because those are fundamental skills, like reading and writing during those ages. Like, it's important, but I think it can fuel the confidence and the sense of identity and the sense of, I have something valuable for the world when you spend much more time in what they enjoy and what they're passionate about and in what they excel at.
Yes,
So,
yes.
yeah.
Yeah, I couldn't agree more. So let's shift gears a little bit and talk about how your own ADHD evolved over your lifetime. What was it like for you to be a kid and a student, then a teacher, and now a leader of other teachers and parents?
Yes. So when I was a kid, I was a middle child. I had a this deep desire in my heart to prove myself, because as a middle child, you kind of like lack identity a little bit. And so I think that probably worked in my favor as much as like being good in academic school. But I remember a specific time when I was in first grade and I was behind in math. Actually, if we go way back to preschool, like I remember in seventh grade, they gave us these books of like all the notes that the teacher has take had taken about us from the beginning. And I remember reading in all the reports, she's so distracted. She's talking all the time. No. She's smart, but she can't stay sitting down. No. All these things. And it was just a consistently like distracted, this and that. And there was kind of like a sense of rebellion in my spirit since my childhood that I realized now is so fundamental to what I'm doing, because to be a leader in a movement like homeschooling, that's rebellious, right? It's not the traditional way. But I think that it's important that I use that desire inside of me and that rebellion, because it did have value to offer to the world. And so I remember my mom had to sit with me for pretty much every afternoon for like 3 months or so to help me get caught up in math, because I couldn't understand it myself. I probably could have, but my issue was probably like I was too distracted in class and I needed more of that one-on-one attention to grasp the concepts. And once I started to see that I actually did have the capacity to learn these, I started seeing myself as a young kid, that this was not like a mountain that I couldn't climb. And I would say it was that belief alone that changed everything for me academically from that point on. Because this was in first grade where I was like failing math. And then in second grade, I was like the first student of the month with honors. And like from that point on, I was just like top of the class. And so, I don't think much more changed in that other than the individualized attention that I had from my mom for a brief period and the belief in myself. And that's why I'm sure we'll talk about this later, but that's why I think it's so heart crushing when so many kids with ADHD are told in school constantly their confidence is being attacked because they don't feel they fit into that mold where they have to be sitting down, and anyway, we'll get into it later. But I do remember my sister is a behavioral analyst. And so she sent my mom some questions about her as a kid. And she was like, "Mom, can you tell me if I had any of these symptoms of or any of these, behaviors when I was little?" And I remember even in middle school and high school telling my mom, "Mom, like I think I have ADHD." Like my mom would be like, "No, you pay attention in class. You're such a good student. Like you don't have ADHD." Na-na-na. Anyway, so my mom was telling me, this was recently, it was this year. She was like, "Huli, I was filling out these questions for your sister. And as I was answering them, I was realizing, no, this is a no for my daughter, Laura." That's the name of my sister, Laura. But for my daughter, Huli, yes. And so she was like, and then I realized while answering that question, like all those years that you were telling me you had ADHD, and I told you you didn't, you did. But I just didn't know enough about it because it was other times, right? So I think that I wasn't completely sure that I fell under this category, but I did have a suspicion. And I think for me, because I was successful in school, which is very rare for ADHD students to be successful in school, I had confidence in myself that I can make something great out of it. And so, I did well and I learned how to use my ADHD as a gift. You were talking earlier about this being kind of like people perceiving it as a disability. And I think that the name that I like to give it is a gift. It's not necessarily a gift that makes you better than others, but it does make you more capable for a certain specific type of goals, and if you know what those are and you can focus more on those and do less of what you're not that great at and focus more on what you're good at, then you can create more impact. And so that translated from my childhood into my adulthood as a very confident person and believing that I could build something that wasn't built yet, because I think that's another great ADHD advantage is that you have the ability to think outside of the box a lot. And in a world where technology advances so fast, thinking outside of the box is essential. So yeah, I think that's how I translate to now. I'm not going to say everything just works great and it's perfect because, of course, like everybody has strengths and weaknesses. And I do feel I do fall into, we'll say, the disadvantages of the ADHD from time to time because I get super excited about my work and I think that I can do a million things and I sign up for all the things that I can do and I commit to it. And then when I was filing in the questions for like the pre-interview for this interview, I remember, being so positive, and then I think it was 2 weeks after that I got super sick because I burnt out because I was doing the ADHD thing because I was just like so excited. So I think it's important to understand how your brain works so you can create proper balance as you also focus on what you're good at.
Absolutely. Yeah. And I think the story you just told touches on another couple of strengths that we tend to have too. One of those is the ability to collaborate and cooperate with other people. People with ADHD tend to be oftentimes, not always, but oftentimes very social and pretty aware of the things that they're good at and the things that other people can be good at. So we can make great team leaders, we can make great entrepreneurs. It
Yeah,
simply, go
I
ahead.
lead a team of 16 people.
Wow.
And I think that the reason why I'm able to do that so harmoniously is because of the ADHD. Like it's like you can't do it all, and you have to learn how to delegate. I'm sure you teach this inside your program about the 80-20 rule. Yeah, and so I think that's essential to being more productive. And I think when you do learn to do that, you can be more productive than anybody. I will say also, my brother was a great influence in creating that discipline, because discipline is so hard for ADHD individuals. And it's like you have to kind of draw boundaries around yourself for certain things. And I remember one time in middle school, because I would be the kind of student that like I want to do good. So I would come home and I would study and I would do my work and I'd do my homework and I would work hard. Of course, at this stage, I was still leaving everything to the last minute. But I would work hard nonetheless. And I remember my brother telling me, like, because he would come home and do barely anything. Like everything just came so easy for him. And he was like top of the school. Like my brother was like next level genius. And I remember him saying to my parents at dinner one time, it's like, oh, you know, my trick is just like if they send me homework, I do it on the day they send it. And that way I don't have to think about it again. It was somewhere he was in high school, I was in middle school. And I think when he said that, I was like, I'm gonna try to apply that. I'm not gonna say that I applied it to the full extent, but I started kind of living by that rule. It's like I know that I like li leaving everything for the last minute. When he said that, I was like, he's doing it. I was very competitive with my brother. He's doing it. I gotta do it. And then that was a habit that I kind of established pretty early on that also helped me a lot in having, I would say, academic success. And even so now, because if I didn't have my calendar with my tasks that I have to do, I probably wouldn't get as much done as I do today. So yeah, I think calendars are very important for ADHD, along with the discipline, of course.
Yeah, it's interesting. It sounds like you really tapped into the emotional regulation in being able to look at your future self and the stress that it causes you if you wait till the last minute to start on something and apply that to the current moment, to follow your brother's advice, to start on the thing right now.
Yeah, I think it was the right motivation because and also like the cycle repeating so many times. Because on top of being a good student, I also was on the athletic teams and I was in drama and I was like, I was in so many activities. So in order to do all the things that I wanted to do, which I do believe my ADHD played a role in that, I think in order to, you know, fulfill my ambitious goals, I needed to be more organized. I still find like in this day, I have a coworker who is very very organized. My assistant is also very organized, so I keep a lot of organized people around me for a reason. But I remember him teaching me like tricks on how to build systems to help me in my process. And I remember him being frustrated. It's like, you only care about the stuff that is imminent. And I'm not going to say that that's not the case anymore. Like there's a lot of things that like I only see when they're right there, but I think I've come a long way because of those early seeds that some good influences planted in me. I was like, why do I not think like that? You know? And it was kind of like, I have to make myself think this way, you know? I have to be greater than my initial impulse because this is the desires and the ambitions that I have in my heart. Those need to be bigger than like my emotion in the moment, like you said, emotional regulation. And I would say also, this is also a case for a lot of students in my program. It's hard when you know you have to do something that you don't want to do to sit down and do it. But once you're sitting down and doing it, it's like the hyper focus comes in, which I think is a superpower of the ADHD individuals. So it's like it's just getting over that first. Yeah, I there's a there's a I read this quote the other day. It's like the heaviest weight that you lift at the gym is the front door. And I think when it comes to ADHD individuals, it applies to a lot of things in life, not just the gym. It's like the hardest part is just getting past that first, okay, I'm gonna sit down and do it, and I'm gonna start doing it. You might sit down and then find something to distract yourself, but if you start doing it, you correct me if I'm wrong. I think this is an ADHD thing, or symptom. It's like you start something, it's really hard to move to a new task until you're finished, or like I don't know, like I do have the hyper focus part of it. So sometimes I find I start doing something, even though I only put in my calendar that I was going to do that for an hour. I'm not done, and the hour is done. I was like, I gotta finish it. And like sometimes I'll finish maybe 15 minutes and I get on to the next thing. But I think it works in my favor. It's like once I jump the hurdle of okay, I'm gonna do this and I start focusing on it, I can do it really well.
It may be a function of just the way dopamine works in all kinds of brains, but especially in ours. I always tell people that motivation isn't the first thing. You don't need to be motivated in order to start. Motivation always follows action. So in your case, the example you gave, the action was just to get started. Once you get started and you get that ball rolling, then the motivation comes and keeps you on task. But to that point, this is a little bit of a tangent, but you mentioned being into athletics as a student and possibly even still now athletic in adulthood. Do you find an overlap between your the ha whatever habits you have of moving your body and being able to focus?
Absolutely. It's like in unbelievable how different it is when I go to the gym in the morning before I start working compared to when I skip it for whatever reason until the end of the day. It's absolutely different. I think working out, I don't know what it is because I'm not an expert in this subject, but it's something about after you work out, it's much easier to focus. Is much easier to, accomplish. There's a saying or like a principle in entrepreneurship. It's called you gotta eat the frog in the morning. So what that means is like you take your hardest task of the day and you do it first. And I think that's a great advice. It's kind of like what my brother did, like the example of my brother. Now I do it with work. Like there's certain tasks that I don't love doing as much because I find them a little bit more difficult to focus on. I usually put those tasks right after my workout at the beginning of the day. And those are the only times that if I put that hard task at the end of the day, it's getting pushed for sure. But if I put it at the start of the day, it might be difficult to get started, but once again, once I start doing it gets finished. And so I think, yeah, having a routine, having a workout. I also remember my friends telling me in school, so I went to a private school and the bus picked us up at like 5:30 in the morning to start school at 7 because it was like, or yeah, it was a long drive. Maybe no, we woke up at 5:30. We got picked up at 6:30, start at 7. So there was one point, I think it was in high school, where I started going for runs before school. Like I would go for a run super early. I'm not that good at waking up that early anymore, but I was back then. I was young and full of energy. And so I remember there was a time where like sometimes I would skip the run and I'd be super hyperactive in school. And my friends would ask me, Huli, did you go for a run today? Because they could tell when I was more focused, because I was just so like, do you know what I mean? So yeah, I think working out is very important
Absolutely.
for people wanting to improve their ability to focus.
Absolutely, yeah. That cracks me up that even your friends could notice.
Yeah. I'm a very expressive person, so I guess there's not much that I can hide.
Yeah. Now, when it comes to the students you work with today, what is your experience with ADHD and them? And what do you think traditional school environments are getting wrong? And I guess the flip side of that is how homeschooling can make a difference.
Yes, I have so much to say on the subject. I'll say I've seen a lot of students that have gone from traditional schools to homeschooling, like with our program, because those are the ones that I get to be close with and see their journey. Thrive so much because they don't have so much pressure to be somebody who they're not, instead of having to adapt their entire selves to the commands that they're receiving. They're able to have a curriculum, a program adapt to them. And I think when you give that child that opportunity, they start to really flourish. And so I've seen kids that gain their confidence back because at school they're being scolded all the time, they're getting in trouble, their parents are getting called constantly. So they develop this negative relationship with education because it's like they associate education with the school. And the school, they feel, hates them. And so they start to believe that I'm sorry for saying this word, they're stupid. Like I hear it all the time, kids calling themselves stupid because they believe that because they see, a number of other kids doing well and they're always being the one being singled out. And so when that change first happens, it's the confidence that starts to be restored. But then also in the programs that we design for these type of students, they're very hands-on. And you have to know, so one thing that we do inside our program is we do an intake assessment to analyze what are the child's dominant learning styles and what are the child's multiple intelligences, like the predominant intelligences.
Yes,
So with ADHD, it's different. Sometimes the children have very low auditory intelligence, or very, like their dominant learning style is not the auditory. So if there's someone talking at them, you're just talking through them. So a lot of ADHD kids learn best visually. But then there's also a lot of students that learn best. This is also very typical in ADHD, kinesthetically. So they need to use their hands, they need to move around. And then when it comes to the multiple intelligence, there's like, I'm thinking about one specific student, but there's many cases like this where they have a very well developed interpersonal intelligence. Like their dominant learning style is interpersonal. So for them to learn something, they need to talk to people, they need to have discussions, they need to have some sort of social interaction to learn a concept. And so this type of intelligence doesn't survive well in a classroom. And they talk so much about if you don't send your kids to school, how they're going to have social skills. But when they're in school, they're not really allowed to talk to each other unless it's like prompted. Okay, group activity, and it's so limited. So it's like unnatural. So I find, when the kids come into a program, we try to really understand how their brains work because not all ADHD kids are the same either. So we try to understand, and then we design a program that they're going to thrive in. These are the concepts that you need to learn. These are the dominant learning styles that you have. So we're going to teach you these concepts through that dominant learning style, and we're going to make these subjects. We're going to make it a project altogether because that's another thing. ADHD kids, they're very smart. They like to question things. So when they're given an assignment that it's completely decontextualized from its purpose, like you're learning to even a simplest thing to add. How is adding, because they're seeing like a worksheet where it's like 2 + 2 = like how does that apply to the world? Whereas if you're teaching the child, like for example, at a greater level, okay, let's do a budget. Let's do a personal budget. What are my expenses? What are my earnings? And so now they understand why they need to add and subtract and multiply and all these things, because it's the concept is being directly applied to the exercise in life. So yeah, so we'll do that too, instead of just giving the content in like, here's math, here's English, we give them a project, and the project has reading, math, but it's all connected to a purpose. So from the beginning, the child feels, okay, we're going to start doing this and we're going to accomplish this. And it's clear how that's ha how that has an applicable risk outcome in the real world. And so they're more engaged as well through that type of, they call it experiential learning.
Yeah, it really capitalizes on that interest-based nervous system. You capture
Yes.
their interest by showing them how this applies to the real world in their
Exactly.
lives. And then
Yeah.
all of a sudden, things become so much easier.
Yeah.
That makes perfect sense. I wish that I had known about Homeschool to Go years ago. My son, my older child, homeschooled his final 2 years of high school, and I wish we had done it sooner. But the main reason I didn't is because I let my own stories about my brain get in the way. I thought I would be too distracted, or I couldn't stick to a schedule, or have the kind of capacity to do the things that he would need to do to learn what he needed. What do you say to the moms listening who would love to give their kids a homeschool opportunity, but they don't believe they can?
I think that so I want to give the focus to the family rhythm, because
Please.
you pointed that out, and I think that's a big one that a lot of families or moms have when they're in that decision stage. There, when you homeschool, you don't have to be sitting down 5 hours a day.
You don't
It's
have to sit
like
down at all, right?
you don't even have to sit down at all. There is some work that you do sitting down, that requires, like, I call it the contractive and the expansive activity. So there's like the mental work that you do, and then there's the physical work that you do. There needs to be a balance. But yeah, when it comes to a child that likes to move around, or a mom that likes to move around, that needs variety in her day, it's going to work for the both of them. And there's so much more that you can do. Experiential learning gives you 60% more retention, 80% more engagement. So if you're sitting down doing academic learning, you have to do the exercise 400 times before your brain creates that connection that it's like a learned concept that is mastered. If you're doing it through experiential learning, it's way less than that. It's like six times or something like that. I could be wrong in the number, but it's a one-digit number.
Wow.
And so you save so much time and you learn so much more. So you can have a much more balanced life. Like we give the moms a family rhythm when they come in. And so it's just knowing that homeschooling is not as complicated as it sounds. And that if God, the universe, whoever you believe in, put that desire in your heart to want to give that opportunity to your child, and you think that what's stopping you is maybe not being qualified, maybe not being capable, know that there's no other individual in the world than the parent that is more qualified to be the teacher. Not because there's nobody who's going to care the more about your child than you. So you already have that. As a teacher, I care deeply about all my students, but at the same time, I didn't have the capacity to give it all to them because there were so many of them. And at the end of the day, I had to give up. I had to, not give them my absolute best because I was exhausted. With your child, you're not going to do that. It's less of a number, but also you have more opportunities. So there's nobody who's more qualified. What you need is the right structure in your time and the right tools and the right support. That's what we created inside our program. We wanted to make it more possible. So, I do have a free gift that I can give to all of your audience. It's a free masterclass that answers all of those basic questions that parents have at that time. The
Great.
social skills myth, the how to create your time, like how to build your family rhythm that it's sustainable. All those things are in that class, and it's for free. If you go to homeschooltogo.org and click the button that says the free masterclass, I can also give it to you so you can put it in the show notes.
Definitely.
But yeah, if you have the desire in your heart, know that you are the most qualified because you care, and that there's so many ways you can adapt that experience to your life as it is today. So you just have to find the right tools. And people like me are out here to help you. So reach out and get the support that you need, and make that dream a reality. It's possible.
I love that message. And just to underscore, there is nobody doing it like you do. The
That's
way
right.
you individualize it to family, the way you take a holistic view, a bilingual view, I mean, it's really, really special. And I'm so grateful that you were here today to talk about it.
Thank you so much for having me.
Your my pleasure. Your work and your dedication are so inspiring. I hope they will light the way for other parents to think more expansively about what education can really mean, because it does not have to look like traditional school. It can look like life in the way that you want to live it.
Exactly.
So one more time, we will put this all in the show notes, but one more time for anybody listening, tell us again how folks can find you, please.
Yes. So if you go to www.homeschooltogo.org, you'll see right there in the front page a button that says free masterclass. That's for free. After you watch that, there's going to be an opportunity to talk to me in case you're interested in our program. But if you're not, you still get all of that free information that's going to help you take the next step, and it's going to be very valuable. It gives everything, like the legal, like how you comply with homeschooling legally in your state. It's everything. So yeah, that's it.
Fantastic. Holly, thank you again for your time. It's been really wonderful to talk with you.
Thank you for having me.
And here is your ADHD Alchemy Lab Kit. Three ideas from this episode that you can try in your own life. First up, design for energy, not attention. So instead of asking, how can I make my child sit still and pay attention longer? Start asking, when does their calmest energy peak? And how can we use that? So, an experiment you might try here is to schedule a learning block after your child has had some movement or novelty or hands-on activity versus when they just wake up in the morning before they've really gotten activated. They might still be a little bit groggy. ADHD brains learn through momentum, not stillness. Speaking of that, the second idea is to replace sit still with show me. ADHD kids don't need more compliance. They need expression. So instead of using worksheets, ask your child, can you teach this back to me? Can you build it? Can you draw it? Can you act it out? Learning sticks when it moves through the body. Number three, confidence is the real curriculum. Academic gaps can be filled in later, and often they come along naturally just through learning life lessons. But shame takes decades to undo if it ever comes undone at all. So I'd like you to experiment with ending the day by naming one thing they did well, not one thing they finished. In fact, it's even better if you can ask your child to identify something they did well or felt really good about doing. We're not just educating a child, we're protecting their self-trust, their self-image, their self-esteem. And by the way, all of these ideas can apply to yourself as well as your homeschool child. That's your lab kit for today. I hope you will try one of these ideas and let me know how it goes. Thanks for listening to the ADHD Alchemy Podcast. If this episode had you nodding along and thinking, yeah, that's me, make sure you're subscribed and consider sharing it with another woman who might feel a little more seen and a little less alone because of it. Together, we are rewriting the ADHD shame story into one of strength. I'll see you next time.